Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. About to begin the call here. And welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law with our speaker, GW. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call, brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be, well, get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. Just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of the deal, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However experienced and educated, again, as these opinions might be, at the end of the day, they are still just that. They're just people's opinions. And it is always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. If I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. We look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. But now, these two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First, on the left, you've got the jurisdictionary course. That is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American Jurisprudence, or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic concept of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you might find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process. Now, this one is, of course, primarily known for its extremely high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's primarily sought out for. It's definitely what it's most popularly procured for. But that's not really why we've got it on this page. The reason that we've got it up here essentially is once you've gone through the jurisdictionary course and then you start getting into this common law default process, you'll see very, very quickly that the two kind of go hand in hand. The common law default almost feels like a real-life homework assignment. A lot of the core pillars that you learned about in the jurisdictionary seem to line up perfectly there with the common law default process. Then on top of that, you factor in that traffic scenarios. If somebody's going to have the first go around in a court scenario, the traffic scenario is going to be a lot more palatable, less stress. Worst case scenario, what are you really looking at in most traffic cases? And you pay the ticket and keep going if it doesn't go there. Something step is missed, something doesn't work right. So we encourage you to pick that up at your earliest convenience. The very, very generous asking of just a meager contribution of $250 for the jurisdictionary and $150 for the common law default process. And so we hope that you'll pick those up at your earliest convenience. Also there, while you're at the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, again, at your earliest convenience, we encourage you to go ahead and click register and sign yourself up for an account. Again, very, very reasonable asking of a contribution of $10 a month for that. Just an incredible wealth of knowledge to be found there at Your Remedies in the Law. If there's any questions of that, we can point you to yourremediesinthelaw.com/testimonials, or if you're brought in by a friend, ask them about it. They'll tell you. A lot of wonderful books there and easy DIY processes on how to educate yourself in certain matters. And, of course, every call is recorded going back years. So if you like what you're hearing on these calls, you've got years and years of archives of countless calls and an untold vast wealth of knowledge and experience there to go through. And so we encourage you to check that out. If that's not an option for you today, of course, you have Freedoms Radio, www.freedomsradio.com. Every call is broadcasted out over Freedoms Radio, and there's never a charge for that. You don't have access to the archives, unfortunately, or the books or anything like that that you would get with the membership at your Remedy, but at least you don't have to miss a call again if you don't wish. And, again, you don't get as much opportunity for one-on-one interaction with the information providers, but at least you do have that question bar there at Freedoms Radio. You can always type in your question or comment. Don't forget, of course, to click the submit button. But those calls, those comments, questions pop up on our end, and we do our best to read every single one of them out over the air with a 99%+ success rate. So, again, you don't have to miss a call or an interaction if you don't wish. All right, Grassfire Communications, formerly known as Statewide Communications. If you haven't signed up for this yet, please still do. Tell your friends, tell your family about it. Tell everybody about it. It's an incredible tool. Essentially what it is a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. So you've got yourself a very easy-to-use install wizard, a very user-friendly install wizard. You know, put your name in here, click next, zip code, click next. Pick from a long list of topics. You have a long list of topics to pick from. No matter what your issue is, you will find it in that list or something extremely close. Doesn't matter whether it's credit cards, home foreclosures, status change, trust, charitable religious trust, veterans' rights, health rights. I mean, just on and on and on. You'll find it in the list. And then you're going to have something like a radius. You know, how far away from home do you want to go? You know, 10 miles, 50 miles, 200 miles. And when it's all done, it puts it together kind of how most folks probably think of a social media, but nothing at all like social media. Very custom, very private, but how most people would think of a social media. And it puts people in contact with each other again based on, you know, those similar topics. So let's say you jump on there, you get signed up, you jump on there one day and you say, this happened to me today. Maybe the first person comes back and says, well, I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't like that one bit. I don't think that's fair. Well, and as truthful and reasonable as a statement as that might be, I don't know how much that's going to help you in your educational process. Maybe the next person says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I don't think it's fair either. I would go down to my local courthouse and go to the law library. By the by, you know, every county has a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library. So you go down there and you look up those terms and check that out. And they say, well, also there's this YouTube video. I check out this YouTube video. Well, now you're starting to get somewhere. Now you're starting to actually get some traction. You're getting real tidbits that'll lead you towards that educational goal that you're going for. Maybe the third person comes in and says, well, to the second guy, those sound like great ideas. And also, I'd go to there's this website, yourremediesinthelaw.com, and I'd check out this educational process. I'd check out this book. This book is page for page exactly about what you're wanting to learn about. And so, Nancy, what we've done now is we've taken the power of communication, the power of education, and put it back in the hands of the common man. That's all we're trying to do here with Grassfire Communications. By the way, that's that map of the United States that you see on just about every site that we have. All right. Starting to wind down here a little bit. This next portion is called your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For all the information providers here at Your Remedies in the Law, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you're doing just that. Information providers pay for advertising at Your Remedies in the Law. That cost would be an expense to that information provider, along with any other expense that they have associated with your particular process or maintaining their overall office desk there. So that brings us to the even bigger point. What is the refund policy at Your Remedy? What is the exchange policy at Your Remedy? There is none. Again, you're going directly with an information provider. You're doing just that. So So if there was to be any talk of a refund or a credit or anything in that department, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. And even then, that's very extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any information provider's process or time. You're expected to have already had a call or two with that information provider where you are sure that you mesh well with them, that you think that you work comfortably with them. You believe that you know, they are prepared to educate you on the topic that you are wanting to be educated on, so on and so forth. All right. Lastly here, on the subject of these conference calls, all of these speakers at these conference calls are guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we may all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. Stop and take a moment here. I see we've got a new caller from Nevada. Caller, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you. And if you could be so kind as to tell us your first name and how you heard about us.
Now, my name is Ed, and I heard about you from Elmer.
I'm sorry, forgive me. You said your name was Ed, and what did you say after that? I'm so sorry.
I heard about you from Elmer, my friend Elmer.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, yes. Good deal. All right. Wonderful. All right. Let's see here. Do we have our speaker? Has our speaker joined us yet here? Get a refresh here. Are you there, GW? Don't see you. I might have to reach out to him. Bear with me here, folks. GW, I think I see you there. Are you maybe still muted? Well, it looks like he was there, but then he dropped off. And, of course, I do see a lot of returning faces that I recognize. Thank you all so much for coming back. Welcome. Welcome, everyone. Again, my name is Martin Michelson. I don't know if I mentioned earlier there in my little spill, my ramble at the start of the call, but if you have a question about whether we have an information provider that would be appropriate for your particular educational process, your particular topic, all you got to do is call us here at the 1-800 number, 1-800-625-4250. Or you can always email me directly, mm, for Martin Michelson, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com. GW, are you there, sir? While I've got everybody here, too, as well, I want to remind everybody that this Wednesday is going to be Passover. There will not be a call this Wednesday. Is that you, GW?
Actually, Martin, we will have a call tomorrow or Wednesday. Passover is April 20th. Just to let you know.
I appreciate so much y'all's patience, folks. This is a rarity that we get this, but might have been tied up on something. In fact, I think this is probably the first for DW. Most of you can probably attest to that.
Stand by.
All right, bear with me here, folks. I'm going to attempt to reach out to the information provider. Please, folks, don't go anywhere. Looking here at these names, I know most of you will hang in there with me, but for anybody that happens to be new, again, your friends will attest to it. This is a very rare scenario, but we will get somebody here shortly. If there happens to be an issue with the information provider, we usually do have a backup. Or if not, worst-case scenario, Mr. Edward will come on here and we'll just have some Q&A for about 20 minutes and then wrap it up. But that's happened before. It's rare, but it happens. Bear with us here.
We'll be talking tomorrow with Brother John about the application of applying your corrected political citizenship status within litigation. And that's going to be very interesting as well.
Hello. This is GW. Martin, are you there?
Hey, there he is. There he is. All right. Good deal. I have done my little ramble and also took care of some basic keeping as well. So we are ready for you, sir. Just go ahead and jump right in.
Okay. Hopefully it wasn't too long of a wait there.
No.
Okay. Yeah, I guess Michael is a little under the weather right now, so we'll just pray for him, and hopefully he will revive quite quickly. You know. Anyway, it's been a wonderful week. Lots of stuff going on. Of course, if you're hopefully you don't watch the regular news, but even if you're watching alternative news, you know that big things are happening for crazy people out there, and there's a lot of reasons to be concerned about correcting your status, so to speak. Okay, there's big benefits in correcting your status. Just somebody was they've been sending me these articles and these little things about some law they want to pass about using banned apps on your phone. I don't know if anybody's seen that or heard of that, but they want to charge people that use banned apps. Okay, mostly these I think are most in the realm of cryptocurrency type things. Because the federal government's really up in arms about, people being able to sidestep the CBDCs and things like that and use alternative methods to transfer value around the planet and around the country. And so they were saying want to give somebody 20 years in prison and like $250,000 fine, it's got some people really up in arms. But I'll tell you what, that's another reason. All these little different things are reasons why to correct your status, because correcting your status is not the golden, it's not the silver bullet, it's not the golden button that you can push that changes everything in your life, but it definitely puts you on a much better place to be able to weather any kind of storm that they're pushing on the majority, which is U.S. citizens, with all this different kinds of legislation and things like this. It's always U.S. citizens, and that's another reason to look at correcting your status. And so this call, of course, is about correcting your status from being a United States citizen or U.S. citizen, or like it says on your 1040 form, signature of U.S. person. this is about correcting that status from being that 14th Amendment federal citizen category over to becoming and correcting your status as being a national, okay, and having all your God-given rights secured and doing it through the U.S. State Department with a process that we help people to achieve, and they end up with a few documents, and some of those things are, of course, that they can have in their hand are a passport and a passport card. And I always want to say this up front and let people know that when you actually procure these things, it won't actually say on the card, it won't specify that, hey, this is a national. They hide that. They don't want that to be known just on the face of the card. And I know people go into all these different machinations and look at all the stars and all these different things to see if, well, this means this and this means that. It actually, the only place that it really, really matters, folks, is when that card is run. Okay? And I'm not sure if that's you, Martin, that's coming through. If you haven't muted your phone, I don't know. Anyway, okay, there you go. The only place that it really matters and the only time it really matters is when an administrating official that has the authority, okay, to run that particular card or that passport in whatever capacity they're working, whether it's at the TSA or it's a judge or it's the cop alongside the road, that is the place where it really matters, because then it pops up and the information about you on the screen that they can see, and by the way, they're not supposed to show you, they can only see it, that's really, really where it matters, because it differentiates you from the average 14th Amendment citizen that's passing through the gate that is in line. And so, in fact, I just had a signal recording today of one of my Venezuelan clients who took a trip and had to go to a business conference, and actually he's a member with Your Remedies in the Law, and he's got some big stuff going on with Brother John and Michael on some extreme problems he's having with some of these agencies that he came in with, okay? And anyway, he was giving me his little dissertation about how it was different when he used his passport to travel, and he was like, "Wow!" He says that was different. The guy just looked at it for extra long time, but then he just said, "Give me a pass." And so, this call is about that, and we're trying not to get into too many other huge discussions and topics. We do talk about quite a few little dog trails sometimes, but we're trying to keep it to the point of all the different nuances that have to do with correcting your status and what that means exactly. And part of that, of what that means and what's cool about it, once you really understand it, is that once you correct your status, all of the code, statutes, and regulations that are there that are promulgated into the 50 titles of the code, what's called the CFR, Code of Federal Regulations, or often referred to USC, okay, United States Code, they're synonymous with one another. There's only 50 of them. This is where all of the work that goes into legislation at the federal level, okay, and even on the state level, but especially at the federal level, where all these people that want to promulgate all these different code statutes and regulations that have to do with micromanaging your life, okay, that is voted on in the House and runs through the Senate and then gets signed by the President and goes through and gets put into one of one of the 50 titles. These are the things that really only affect and are only really for their property and their franchise. Okay, this is what the Supreme Court says, appellate court cases say, and that's where you really see the real language and realize that there's two separate and distinct citizenships here in America. And one is for the free man, and one is for the slave. And you kind of have to say it that way. And if you're categorized as property and a franchise of the federal government, then you're looked at as, oh, you need to obey this dictate, this statute, code, or regulation, and we want to enforce it upon you. And so the good news is that these things fall away, and once you really learn how to operate in the capacity of somebody that is really more in the place of operating in a what I like to call a constitutional construct rather than a statutory construct or a democracy, because that our democracy is really the side that they promulgate all these different statutes, codes, and regulations, whereas the Constitution is the organic, original, de jure law of the day that we as a nation put together in 1776, and it became the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. Those are the things that really, really, really matter. And so I wanted to just for sake of giving an example, I often will join different little organizations that are out there trying to do some good things. Seems like good things. And so I joined one not too long ago and have been interfacing with the people that have put it together. And it's an organization called Tactical Civics. And this organization has been around for some time. I saw it on one of the shows that I like to tune into, and they were talking about how they all, you know, got very God-fearing people, Christian, and they're trying to bring people back to the Constitution and an understanding to make, you know, basically America made it great again through getting people educated. And when I went on and went through some of their educational materials, I'm really realizing that they're nobody's talking about correcting your status, and they're mostly talking about how we need to change certain acts within Congress. We need to implement different acts, okay, is what they call them, with grand juries and things like this. And, you know, just putting my opinion out there, it's kind of funny because we have on one side, we have the Constitution that pretty much covers just about everything you could think of when it comes to your, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And almost every other subject is pretty much covered, okay? And it's about not harming anybody, all right? And they're not being an injured party, a real human being, if you want to call it that, a real man or woman that's injured. And a lot of the, it just reminds me of the things that are done in religion. You know, we have the scripture, you know, and I'd like to take everything back to scripture. We've got the scripture that gives us all of God's plans and his laws, his ordinances and statutes of what we're supposed to obey in order to interface with our fellow mankind in a way that would be honorable, respectful. And the interesting thing is we don't really need to add to it. There's nothing we need to add to or propose as a new law, a new regulation. They're all there. And I find sometimes that people want to go, they want to think they're going to move forward by adding new things in. You know, even to our the way that we deal with each other in the United States of America. But I think we really have a complete system. And I get a little frustrated in listening to a lot of the rhetoric that I hear in these things. I think we need to go back to certain things and understand them and get educated on the original intent of our forefathers and stick with that. So anyway, with that said, Martin, if you can unmute and open up the line for anybody that has a question, if there's any hands up, hands raised, on we'll venture to do that.
All right, sounds good. Star 2 on your keypad, folks. If you have a question, star 2 to raise your hand. I'll unmute you one at a time. If you're on the Freedoms Radio side, type your questions in the question bar at this time and click submit. First question comes from Frank in Texas. Go ahead, Frank.
Hey, GW. Martin, thank you for your time. GW, I'm going through the program with you and Michael. I reported last week that I had my meeting with the passport intake, and everything went fine. they looked a little funny when they read the affidavit, but then they said fine. And then I read on a competitor's website, said be sure when you submit. Even though they had an affidavit of their own kind, obviously I've done the one that y'all prepared for me and submitted it not only to state, but also with my passport application. This other website said even though they have an affidavit, which you submit, I guess to state, they said be sure to not include that with your passport application. And I thought, well, that's kind of strange. Have you got any feedback on that, why they would say that?
Yeah, sure. Was that by any chance SEDM? Okay. There's you know, I deal with this stuff all the time, and it's kind of funny. There's a lot of good information out there, and then there's some information that can get you in trouble. Let me tell you a little story a student of one of ours right now that's dealing with John and dealing with Michael and myself that I brought in along with another gentleman. They work together, and this gentleman has tried a bunch of stuff. Okay, and he actually did that process that you're talking about where they talk about not submitting the affidavit with the DS-11, okay?
Right.
And make a long story short, okay, he did it, okay? and they denied him, okay, a passport. Now, there's other circumstances involved here that I don't want to get into, that he's got some extreme circumstances, and he was denied. Well, the problem with that, okay, and we're glad he told us that, because the problem with that is that once you're denied a passport for whatever reason, okay, at that point, you cannot reapply for a whole year.
I've heard that.
You're put in kind of a red flag jail, okay? And so it caused a little bit of a conundrum for him particularly. And there are a couple sites that have popped up that utilize information. And if anybody goes there, I'll just tell you, you know, you can read what they say, but please, don't do it, because the problem is that they're telling you not to do it, okay?
Right.
Now, there are reasons for, they will say it will be rejected. Well, here's the thing, all right? In the mindset training that I put out, okay, and I don't know, I know that it's there. I know Michael has it in his one of the PDFs, okay? And it's one of the Supreme Court cases, and this is what it says. It says this phrase. It says, unless the defendant can prove he is not a United States citizen, the IRS has the right to pursue and determine a tax liability. Okay?
Right.
So let's take this, let's kind of deconstruct these phrases here. It says, unless he, they're talking about this gentleman that's in the court case, unless he can prove he's not a U.S. citizen, okay, then the IRS has the right. Well, how would you prove you are not a United States citizen?
It was the affidavit.
Now, there would be the affidavit of citizenship evidence, okay? It would be in a declaration form, an affidavit. It would be your citizenship evidence stating exactly who you are and who you're not, okay? And the affidavit is the highest form of evidence and truth you can put into any administrative or judicial matter, and it can only be countered or rebutted by another affidavit that rebuts it point by point with firsthand knowledge of the facts. Again, you know, finding the penalties of perjury, which they're never
right.
going to do. Okay, they never
right.
do that. They always fall on their sword on that one. So here's the other thing. Evidently, whoever put that together didn't go on the travel.gov website of the Secretary of State's office and look at the information for the instructions, which state that you, as a applicant, can provide with your application for a passport citizenship evidence.
Right.
Okay.
I saw that.
Right there. Okay, we're able to, they tell us we can provide citizenship evidence with our application, and that affidavit is just part of our citizenship evidence that we can provide. And so that's the reason we do it. We get it through every time, and works like clockwork, and we've been successful doing this for many, 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 many years, over 15 years that I've been doing it. And so it is kind of a little unfortunate that you have websites out there that say don't do it. And it causes some hiccups with people. Then they have to start over.
Well, it seemed to me that it was going to be a problem. I've got a second question, GW. I've got friends that I've met recently that have attempted to change their status through another provider. And apparently that provider is getting the passport sent to their offices, and they're stamping on their passports with red ink, American State National, do not detain, do not interrogate, concealed carry, 50 states, lifetime, whatever like that. Are you aware of that?
No, but that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, actually.
Well, isn't that kind of defacing a State Department document?
Sure is. And you know, it's only a matter of time until these people get the gurus that are doing this, not necessarily the people that have ordered them and got them sent to them, but
right.
The gurus that are doing this, let me tell you, they'll make mincemeat out of them.
Well, that's what Strait's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hate to say it because he has a lot of good about what he's doing, but he's got some flies in the ointment, it seems to me. But and that's why I'm working with you and Michael and Bernie and whatnot. So I appreciate everything you've done for me. I brought up those two questions, not only for me, but I thought other people would like to be aware of them as well.
Well, thank you for kind of telling me that. You know, there's a lot of things that happen where people are trying to, how can I say it? They're breaching the process, and they're doing things that are putting a liability on themselves. Now, with Strait, I don't know. This is up for debate because I've had somebody tell me point blank that Strait is, and this is not my opinion. I'm just passing this on, that Strait is a FBI agent or connected, you know. And this is kind of how they work when they do things
right.
Like this. Okay.
Right.
It just create more business for the agencies to come in and especially to make a you know, to get cases through and to get people in trouble and to make it look bad. And so
yeah.
And we don't even have to do any of that, which is so nice.
Well, I've got two friends that have that red stamp on their passports that are wondering if they can get rid of it with lemon juice or whatever. I don't know what they're going to do, but they kind of regret having gone that route, and they're listening to your calls now. So,
well, good deal. All right. hopefully there'll be no blowback for them. You know.
I hope so too. Thank you so much for your contribution.
You too. You too. Thanks for the questions.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Next up, we've got Kent in West Virginia. Go ahead, Kent.
Okay. Good evening, gentlemen. Can you hear me okay, Greg?
Kent.
Yeah.
Kent, how are you?
Okay. And yourself?
Doing great, man.
Okay. So I missed the first part of the call, unfortunately, so I don't know whether you might have covered this, but referring to what you just said about the Tactical Civics Group and other groups, could you finish that story? Were you able to make any headway with them to get them to at least think about the answer may not be adding more laws? Because I find when I talk to people, not just on the issue that you're dealing with here on nationality, that most people are of that conclusion, that we need more laws, not less, and they don't even want to hear about what you might have to say about what their status is or why we're in the position that we're in today. So I'd be interested in some further comments about how you overcome that, if you are able to overcome it.
Well, I'm making some progress with one of the individuals that is one of the administrators right now, and so
mm-hmm.
they're actually going through the process right now themselves, and they're seeing mm-hmm. the light, and hopefully they'll have a little bit of a an ability to have some influence on the numero uno gentleman that's kind of like the head guru. so that they can bring a little light and shine a little light. Because, hey, I would rather see people do it right than, you know, be constantly frustrated. And a lot of these groups, this one in particular, I like it from the standpoint that they're very spiritually conscious about our Father and His Son and salvation and praying and going in that direction. The thing that I find a little challenging is that they want you. The organizer himself is, I guess, has written, you know, like 10 books or I don't know how many. And it just seems to be one of these things where, oh, you got to read my book, and then you got to read this book, and then you got to read the book after it. And the problem is there's no remedies. And nobody's speaking about how they overcame this or how they got, you know, there's no, it's just about getting more people together to, you know, read the philosophy of this one gentleman. And
well, you know, there can't be a remedy. There can't be a remedy because then you couldn't sell any more books. I don't want to be crass about it, but that's what it really comes down to. You know, a lot of people seem to be involved in this quote-unquote movement from a philosophical point of view. When they say they want to solve the problem, but the acts and actions often don't look like they're really looking for a remedy, or let's say a permanent remedy. That's my conclusion.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. Yeah,
so I want to make a further comment about what you said about people such as or groups such as Sedum telling people. I didn't know this for a fact, but, you know, assuming it's correct, not to submit an affidavit. There was a gentleman, I won't mention any names, but there was a gentleman in New Hampshire who was helping people or has helped people for years fill out passport applications. And at one point in time, he said, under no circumstances would you put a Social Security number on that application. And then over time, when people started having trouble with the applications, he said, I'll just give them the number. They have it anyway. What does it matter? Don't you think some of this stuff comes from these people that are giving this advice just being intimidated by what they've heard, and so therefore it's easier to, so to speak, quote-unquote, roll over than it is to really pursue the issues that needed to be pursued? What's your take on that?
Well, okay, so I will say this, and I feel to be extremely blessed to be in the position I'm in with the contacts and friends and influencers that I've been around for many, many years. It was 1996 when I met Brother John. I'm glad that we were able to, through Michael's organization here, reconnect and, move forward. Now, I will tell you this, that there was a time, and the reason I know this is because of Brother John and his close connections. He may have or he may not have the very, very, very close connections at the highest points in the State Department, or he may not, okay? I just got to say that, put that out this way, okay, in case if there's any other, you know, weird listening devices listening to this. And because of that, they're used to, for quite a while, you could not use a Social Security number on an application and it would go through. Those days are gone. Okay. And so that used to be, but it is really I feel the reason I say I feel so blessed is because, being able to get real-time feedback on things happening and how things change and interdepartmental policies that change over time, even though, yes, it doesn't seem right that they would change this because there's laws in place and regulations in place that say this, that, and the other thing about Social Security number. But the problem is they made up their minds. It was there was a group of people in the legislative realm that made a decision, and they said no more, okay, ever happening. In fact, if it happens, as an administrator in that system that you're in, you get charged. Okay, so they got them freaking out now, okay, within the administration. So that's not happening anymore where you can not use a Social Security number, okay? So with that said, there are some remedies, okay? And if you're so, disposed and you have some extreme problems, you need to speak to us privately on a private line. Anybody on this call needs to speak to Michael privately, and he'll deal with it, and there is a remedy. There's extra hoops and things like that you're going to have to jump through, but we're getting them done right and left, and it's pretty amazing, God is good. I'll just say that.
Well, in my question, I was suggesting from what I knew about it that the gentleman in New Hampshire, I thought, was giving up. While those days may be gone now, at the point in time that I heard him, that he was telling people, don't argue about this, just give him a Social Security number. To my knowledge, at that point in time, those days were not then gone forever. And as you point out, if you looked hard and long enough, you could find a remedy to that. That was the point that I was making.
Yeah. Yeah, we have, and it's in place, and so.
Go ahead.
Well, that's right. Go ahead.
Okay, so that I want to make, lastly, I want to make a third point. I was looking at a video made by John Strand, or somebody was interviewing John Strand. I guess he's one of the January 6th people that was tried. Mm-hmm. And he's going for sentencing, and he's facing 24 years. So I decided to listen to the whole interview to see if he said anything about, what we're talking about on this program. And I really didn't hear anything that I felt related directly to that. So I wanted to ask you, I know in the past you've said, and you said tonight, well, I occasionally work with other groups, et cetera. Wouldn't these January 6th detainees be prime material to do exactly what you're talking about and get themselves out from under this? In addition to that, I could ask the same question about Mr. Trump.
Okay, so Trump's separate, but the people you just said, absolutely bingo, you're right on the money. The problem with dealing with detainees that are inside. You're usually having to go through an attorney who's licensed, a bar attorney, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And even though I've had numerous encounters with bar attorneys and discussed this, they are scared to death of this. This shakes their frickin' world, okay? I'm using some terms here. I'm not meaning to be, crass or anything, but this rocks their world. And one thing usually why it rocks their world is because they were never informed about this in law school, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when I show them the evidence, it's almost like a spirit of fear comes over them, all right? And you would think that they'd want to study it out more and things like that, but they realize that if they talk about it, okay, in any
bad
way,
idea.
Or it's gonna rock their existence. So, if somebody that was close to some of these people could actually get affidavits, signed by these people inside, and get them registered and get them in the right places and get them into evidence. And those people, that are inside know how to stand on their new corrective status and talk about it. See, this is all part of the training. This is what's tough, is because you're always being tested, right? Wherever you go, you're always being tested, okay? And so they know how these judges, and you know, they know how to test you really easily, and so it's a real hard thing to do, you know, after the fact. I mean, it can be done. Now, Trump, on the other hand, which is kind of funny, we'll watch how this all plays out tomorrow and the next day and the next day, okay, with Trump. Now, Trump's playing, you know, chess on a 5D level with these people. And, you know, I told you before, and I'm sure people have heard it, I corrected my status in March of 2008. That was 15 years ago. And Trump corrected his status about 4 months after in July of 2008. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask me how I know that.
Okay, you won't ask.
Okay. But anyway, he knows the score. He's pretty plugged in. And he knows how he has to operate, okay? And he knows how he has to talk about things. And I'm sure him and his team have war gamed this thing out amazing ways, okay? And Trump can't come out and talk about being a national right now. He just would not be well received. He would get attacked right and left. It would just cause too much drama, impact, and all kinds of TDS and everything else, you know. Someday, maybe he'll talk about it. But it's really contingent on the rest of us to train our fellow patriots and soldiers and from the grassroots up to get in alignment. And that's a tough job.
Well, other than the fact that this would not be well received by the general public if Trump came out and said this, they really would have no right at this point in time, or what would be their right. You know, let's put aside all the problems with their own laws, you know, turning misdemeanors into felonies, statute of limitations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, some of the problems they have on the statutory front. But if we leave that out of the equation, I mean, why should he even be being charged? Now, I get that this is theater, and he's going through the theater, but isn't he going through a lot more trouble than he really has to go through if he's corrected his status?
Well, we're presuming some things here that, you know, to get into the mind of Trump, and also you got to realize the people that he has around him, at some of the highest levels that are attorneys and whatnot, whether they're really, really aware of this or not is really hard to say. I will tell you this. I will just say this once. If he had a legal advisor like Brother John on his team, it'd be a different situation.
Mm-hmm. So obviously he doesn't have a Brother John on his team then, from what we can observe.
To me, it doesn't look like it. Yeah.
Now, the other point I would raise, you say that it's very difficult to get to people on the inside and, you know, get them to sign an affidavit, let alone understand it so that they could stand on it. I get that. But don't you think that those people on the inside are constantly getting information about people that have already been tried or and may be on the outside now awaiting sentencing, such as this gentleman, John Strand, assuming this video is legitimate? If someone got to John Strand, that information would filter into the other people. Now, look, I'm not saying everybody's going to buy into the program. You know, I'm not that dumb or naive to believe that. But, you know, you might get a certain percentage, and, you know, it's, as has been said before, it's a change of one at a time, you know.
Yep. They just released Jake, the shaman, you know, guy with the horn.
Right.
They just released him, and he's now here in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they kind of released him because of that video that showed up, right, that he was, you know, on a tour, I believe.
Yeah, probably. That was probably some of the pressure that's on the, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it was really for legitimate, quote-unquote, legal reasons or lawful reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so
yeah.
You don't do
public,
any work there.
Public pressure.
To sum this up. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, probably public pressure, but you said I don't do any work. What?
No. So to sum this up, you're not doing any work when you mention these other organizations such as the Tactical Civics Group, et cetera. You're not working with any of these people that I was mentioning to do with January 6th then?
No, I've not had any real contact with anybody representing a January 6th person. No.
Have you thought that that might be a worthwhile endeavor for people that are on the outside and already gone through trial or for some reason are on the outside awaiting trial?
Yeah, I met Jake's mother, and I was thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the situation just didn't pop up at the time to be able to talk to her in any way. She was being directed in a whole bunch of different directions, and I was like, okay, God,
mm-hmm.
you're just not. I was praying about it. Believe me, you know, when I was walking up to her, and there have been times in my life where I've intervened in a number of different things where God just worked it out and it just was like smooth like butter. Okay. That wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to pay attention to the Holy Spirit and try to, if it's time is not right or if it's not the right situation, I don't want to press anything. So it's never, you know, it's not something I'm going to go out there and try to stir up. Every situation that I've ever been involved with, God really orchestrated it to where it was like it wasn't GW doing it. It
mm-hmm.
definitely was God, you know, putting it all together. You know, like the time that I confronted John McManus at the John Birch Society. You know, and
mm-hmm.
when I was up there and made the statement to him. When he was talking about the IRS and he was talking about the Federal Reserve, and what he was saying was just off, and I had the ability, you know, had the opportunity to go and talk to him. This is back in 1990, I just told him, I said, "Listen, Federal Reserve ain't federal, and there's no reserves." And I told him. I said, John, when you get back to Washington D.C., go and get a phone book, a Washington D.C. phone book. I said, go and try to look up the Federal Reserve and the government pages of the, because he was saying it was government entity back then, and I was like, go and look it up where all the government agencies are. They're in the government pages of the phone book. I said, you're never going to find it. I said, then flip over to the yellow pages. I said, right under the FedEx, you're going to see the Federal Reserve listed. I said, because it is a private organization, corporation. Anyway, he did it. You know, 6 months later, I'm watching, you know, cable access on my TV on a UHF channel. For all us old guys out there, we know what that is, okay? UHF, right? And I'm watching cable access, watching one of the John Birch Society presentations, and there's John Birch out there acting like he's, you know, he figured it all out. It's like, I'm telling you, Federal Reserve ain't federal, and there's no reserves. He says, take your phone book. Try to look up the Federal Reserve and the government pages. You won't find it. Then go over to the yellow pages. You'll find it listed right under the FedEx. And I was like, doggone. He did it. That is so cool. And, of course, that meme went out from the 1990s. That Federal Reserve ain't federal and there are no reserves. That really started getting a lot of traction at that point. So
well, generally,
we each
generally, make, yeah, go ahead.
No, I say we, you know, each one of us can make a little bit of a difference, you know, with somebody of influence.
Well, it's my experience that some of the people that are on the payroll of the John Birch Society are very, very difficult to talk to. They have a program to promote, and they want to promote that program, and they don't want anybody interfering with that. So, you know.
There's no remedies there.
Let their creator bless them, and they go on doing what they do. So, anyway, the last thing I want to say, Greg, is if you do have any, if you pray on this or you have any thoughts about what I was talking about, these January 6 people, it's my understanding that this gentleman that I was talking about, John Strand, has a website called JohnStrand, just the way it sounds, .com. So, you know, if you desired, you may be able to reach the guy, and who knows what could come of that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you for the suggestion.
Thanks. I appreciate
it. All right, Kent.
Thanks
for all the questions.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right there, Mark.
All right, thank you so much for that. Next up, we've got Mitchell in Virginia. Go ahead, Mitchell. Mitchell, you might have yourself muted.
Yeah, I am.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Oh, yes, yes. I've been out of the loop for maybe a couple of months, and I reached out to Michael. I hadn't heard back, so I'm one of those people that got involved in this process in last March, and I guess I've fallen through the cracks somehow and just need to know how to, you know, reconnect to get back, you know, get through the process.
Wow. Is it since last March? Not this March, but last March?
No, last March. And when I approached this issue 2 to 3 months back, I reached out to Michael. I hadn't heard back. So tonight I decided, I was like, let me get on the call. It's been a while. So I'm just trying to.
Why don't you reach out to Mr. Edward? Yeah, definitely want to reach out to Mr. Edward.
I'll do that. I'll do that again.
Yep, and I'm going to send him a little reminder thing as well, saying, hey, you know.
I'd appreciate that. I'd appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Mm-hmm. All right, next up from Washington, we've got Armenta. Go ahead.
Hi, good evening. Yes, I have a question. We spoke a little bit earlier about proof of citizenship or non-citizenship to the IRS. So my question is, should we, okay, first I'll say that myself as well as my husband, we have corrected our status. And my question is, in the past we have, you know, received whether it be refund or paid in or whatever through the IRS. And would it behoove us to send our W-8B in and the affidavit to them? Or, I mean, do we just drop off? What is everyone else, you know, doing in this case? Or a lot of people, I should say.
Okay, so now that you have your status corrected and you've got your W-8BEN handy and in place, right?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you're looking at, hey, and so this is usually something I would rather, because I got to ask real specific questions, so.
Okay.
It's not something that I would want to do on, like, a quasi-public call like this.
Sure.
So if it would behoove you to get a hold of Michael and have a three-way on that subject, if that's okay, on
that's fine.
Kind of what I would call kind of a tempered strategic withdrawal, you know, in, as
mm-hmm.
a kind of in a, for a kind of a peaceful solution to
sure.
these things. Yeah, so we could run through some scenarios for sure.
Okay, absolutely.
Yeah.
So yes, I'll set that up. I appreciate you answering my question or, you know, having a remedy.
No
so look forward to speaking with you soon.
Okay. That sounds good.
All right.
I look forward to
okay.
it, too.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. You have a wonderful evening.
You too. Thank you. And thank you for everything that you share, all the knowledge you have. I'm sure I'm speaking for everybody on the line. You know, it's just a blessing from God. So thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2 to raise your hand or type it in on the Freedoms Radio side. All right, Michael from Nevada. Go ahead, Michael.
You there?
Oh, yeah. Mike, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Was that for me? Was that for my hand?
Yes.
That must have been.
Okay. And so going back to the tax liability and your status not being all the way corrected, the IRS can challenge whether or not your status is corrected or not. So you said to file an affidavit?
Okay. You're asking a question. Once your status is corrected, you're asking
No, before my status is corrected and I'm filing exempt and I still haven't, like, done my revocation of election and all the other – you know, all the other steps, I'm just putting exempt without recourse UCC 1-308 on my exempt W-4 to limit my liability for, like, owing them. What should I do? What's my best course of action? Because I still got a couple months till I'm corrected.
Yeah. So, you know, those are some of the things that I would rather do, just like the lady that just asked the question.
Okay.
Because there's some kind of personal questions that need to be asked, and don't really want you airing out everything on the public call.
Yeah. Okay. But there is no set of specific steps that makes your status corrected. It could be, I mean, even additional things beyond the revocation of election and the social, you know, beyond all that stuff too, right? Like, I've heard like an affidavit of repudiation and all kinds of just additional steps that kind of like just solidify it. So there's not any specific formula.
Well, you know, now you're going through the process now, right?
Yeah, I just reorganized my trust, and I'm getting into, like, correction steps now.
Okay. And so do you have your W-8-B-E-N in place and filled out with its affidavit attached at this point?
No, I have it in my clipboard, but I don't have an affidavit attached with it. Should I do that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why we always suggest strongly that when you get the affidavits done, that you're getting at least a minimum of three. You know, more like it's better to have like five. Okay.
Okay.
Affidavits done at one time where you have them all notarized, so that you can attach one of those to a W-8-BEN that's properly filled out.
Okay. And that can be a copy of that notarized affidavit.
I wouldn't do a copy. I would do original.
Do an original with the WA. Okay. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing what you guys do, man. I appreciate it too.
Okay. All right, man.
All right, bye.
Sounds good. Bye bye.
Then we've got go ahead, Bill, you've been muted.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can, loud and clear.
Great. Hey, I'm my first time on your call, but I'm already working with Bernie and Michael on a, I got a corporation sole in the works, and I've got a couple of CRTs going. And I'm kind of doing a little investigating on the correcting the status, and I'm going to probably do a land patent. So I got plenty of business rolling your way. But I got a couple of questions. One thing, does the U.S. Inc. bankruptcy change, how does that affect all this with correcting status? Isn't the corporation bankrupt?
Yeah, but
U.S.
It has,
Inc.?
But it has nothing to do with your status.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with you being able to change your status either. You know, it's a
okay, so you said well, I'm just going to set that aside. Another thing is, I'm a disabled senior. I'm in my 60s, and I'm currently collecting Social Security disability. How does that affect?
Doesn't affect it at all. Yeah, once you correct your status, it does not affect anything to do with Social Security payments, any of your Social Security benefits, or any pension benefits or anything like that you would receive. Doesn't affect it one way or another.
Well, that was one of my fears, is if I, you know, I change to a national, my benefits are going to be, you know, interrupted. So that's not
I know, everybody has the same fear. Never heard of it. Yeah. Never ever heard of it. And I've been doing this, like I said, for 15 years, and I'm hooked up with other organizations that have been doing somewhat the same process, not exactly like we're doing, but they get it done. And they have some groups out there that are normally discussing all these different things. And let me tell you, that's one thing that's brought up quite often. And the thing is, if one person out there was ever affected because they change their status and all of a sudden, you know, the Social Security Administration gets a hold of them, well, because your status changed, now it's you're not eligible for – we would hear back so fast it'd make your head, you know, thin. Good news travels pretty fast, but bad news travels at the speed of light.
Yep. So, how long does it take? Go ahead.
Well, what I'm trying to say is nothing like that in a negative sense do we ever get any feedback on, ever.
Okay.
Not even once. Yeah.
And how long does it take start to finish from when you first start this journey?
As far as getting, you mean the passport in your hand and the passport?
Well, no, the correction of the status. What's that typically take to go through the whole deal with all the steps, whatever they are?
Yeah, it usually takes about a month to 2 months. Usually.
Oh wow, it's pretty quick then.
Yeah,
pretty quick.
It can be very quick. Yeah.
And what's the what do I get with Mike if I'm interested? Get more information and what the costs are and all that stuff.
Yeah, just get together. You know, it's $5,000 for the correction of the status. Okay. And just get together with Mike, and reach out to him if you have his 800 number.
I got his cell phone number.
He's just a little under the weather right now. His voice when he talked to me, his voice is very. So give him a day or two, okay? And then reach out.
Okay, great. That answers all my questions. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'll be a regular listener on your calls on Monday night now. Thank you.
You're welcome. Welcome aboard.
All right, then. Now we've got Tommy in Louisiana. Go ahead, Tommy.
Yes. When you file your W-8-B-E-N, are they still supposed to take out money from your check to for Medicare and the Not Social Security, Medicare and
FICA.
I'm sorry, I lost the other part. It's two things they take out of your check for withholding besides Social Security.
Right. FICA?
I said Social Security and Medicare. Are they supposed to keep taking that out, or does it stop with the taxes?
It depends on your employer. That's one of those where it just depends on your relationship with your employer, and it's really hard to get your employer to fight your IRS battles for you. So none of them will do that, okay? And so when you put in the correct paperwork to them, whether they're going to change that or not is really contingent upon them, because and it can be a very tough thing. So right now you're situated as a W-2 worker, I take it.
I was, and I turned in my W-8-BEN to them and loaned my other paperwork to correct all their work they had on me.
Okay. Yeah. It really depends on the employer. Really depends on the employer. Yeah.
But this is people ready. It's a temporary service.
Okay. Yeah. That might be a little bit of a tough one. There are some other remedies out there. You ever go on the Wednesday call?
Occasionally.
Okay. You know which call I'm talking about with Slevin?
I've heard some of the calls, yeah.
Yeah, with the LLCs, especially written LLCs. They have a service that helps. So Harris Levin has a service with that for the first year that he does, that's no extra charge, where he interfaces with your employer and very successful with getting them to change over.
Okay, so I call in on Wednesday night and talk to him, or do I just ask Michael to hook me up with him?
Yeah, either way. To get a better understanding.
But not this Wednesday.
What's
Wednesday's
that?
Passover. But not
this Wednesday. Oh, this Wednesday.
Passover, but all the other Wednesdays. Yes.
Okay. Very good.
Wow, Easter already. Wow. Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, Tommy.
Thank you so much. All right. And we've got Frank. Go ahead, Frank.
Yes, another question.
Okay.
Are you there? Hello, Frank. You might have yourself muted. Frank in Texas, are you there? Well, it looks like he dropped off. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question, or type it in on the Freedom's Radio side. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, so we're going to go ahead and wind it up here. Getting another refresh here.
Okay. All right.
How was your last week?
Mine?
DW. Yes, sir.
Yeah, mine was good. It's been very live. Good, a lot of good stuff going on.
All right, getting one more refresh on the Freedom's Radio side here. Okay, it looks like, we've got a couple here. First one types in, after you correct your status, next step is to file with affidavit and send it to the IRS, correct? I also did not get a passport card
due to the post office mistake, did not charge me the correct amount for both book and card, so I'm having a second interview with DS-11 and new affidavit, different date for card only. New date on affidavit doesn't matter, correct?
No, doesn't really matter. Yeah. Sorry to hear that they fudged that up.
Okay. All right. And Mike in Nevada. Go ahead again, sir.
Yes. I worked for multiple employers through the year because I worked construction out of different union halls. And you have to fill out a separate employment application with every one of them. And on every one of them, they ask you what you're claiming to be. Are you a U.S. person? Are you this? Are you that? I always put I'm an American national. And, of course, most of them have never heard of that, so that's the first red flag for them. And I tell people that I have to explain it to them. Well, this is what the law is, and there's a separate but equal here. We have, like Social Security is a Social Security Trust Corporation, and everybody thinks of it like it's a candy factory. It's not. That it's a pyramid scheme, and they've got you indoctrinated into it. And just like the form, W-8-BEN, they've never seen that, so they're confused about that because it says Union State Citizen, and they have no idea what that is. And I said, well, have you read the tax law? Have you read the first page? You know, where it says you're voluntary. You're voluntary. You're going to give them your money for free. And no, I've never read that. Have you read the Social Security Trust Act? No, I've never read that. Do you read anything at all? No, I don't have time for that. End of story. They don't have time. If you don't know what your remedy is in the law, then how do you use the law? And I have friends of mine that are in the different, you know, trades. And I keep telling them, you know, this is not a one-way street. This is a lifetime thing that you have to go down. And once you go this way, don't back up, because after you realize what you're doing and understand the difference between a corporation and your free person, which the writers of the Constitution understood, but they never taught you in school, and they don't want to talk about it anymore. You can't go back. And I've been on this path for since 08, 010, and I'm not going back, ever. And I don't care what they say or do. Yeah, it just doesn't matter to me.
That's awesome, so, man.
It's
and you're
most
people, and you're the,
most people. Sir, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, if I remember, you're the one that does a lot of, I think, also steel work, right? And
yes.
Welding.
Yeah. Yes.
And you have told us before that every job you go to, it's a brand new situation. So you have to put in the paperwork all over again, right?
Every one of them. Because if you work for one employer, you could sit down with them and explain it and show them the legislated law and show them Title 26 and say, well, read this. Here's the legislated law. Just like Section 83A in Title 26, transfer of property. Wages are not taxable. Only the excess is, which is what the tax court judges and the federal judges and the county, all these judges, they're getting some financial benefit from you being in their court, but I'll guarantee you on their tax form, they're not claiming the excess that they're getting from that. Because in 1938, I believe the judiciary made a concerted effort to, because before that they weren't taxed. They said, okay, we'll be taxed, but then we get to have a vested interest in the fines we levy. So let me ask this. Can you get a fair trial in a court where they or have a financial interest in taking your money? I mean, people need to wake up.
Yeah. Well, I love how you're on it. I love how you know, I love what, I forget what judge it says, that you must be the belligerent claimant, okay? And I think of you often at times when that phrase is mentioned, because you've done that, and because you're trained up in it and you've done it so many times, it's a lot easier for you. You know, you're ready for it, which is very cool. You know,
I have, you know, I'm 73 years old. What do I have to lose? Yeah, and life is ticking away one day at a time. You know, tomorrow might not be green side up, and then you'll have another call to answer, and
that's right.
It'll be an abrupt.
It could be your final call, which would be real cool.
Yes, yes, but most people aren't prepared for that either. So.
Well, yeah, that's right.
I go through every day thinking about these things.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I just wanted to share that with you, because most people work for one employer, so they don't have to fight that battle. But I fight it on a weekly or monthly, sometimes weekly, sometimes monthly, sometimes every 2 or 3 months. I have to go at them to try to educate them, and some of them they're like a block wall. I mean, you just keep pounding against it, but they're so indoctrinated they can't see the trees for the forest.
Yes, but my thing is, in this little talk here, is that you prevail, right?
Oh yeah. I'm not. I don't quit. I don't quit. I don't back up. I don't quit. I'm sorry, but yeah, I don't care if there's 200 of you, 2,000 of you, 200,000. I'm not quitting. I'm sorry. I just, it's not going to happen.
That's great. So, all right.
Like I said, when you go down this road, you just can't, you can't go back.
Right.
There's no going back.
Amen.
So I hope that was a good benefit input for some people.
I think it would be.
All right. Thank you so much, Mike.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing, Mike.
All right. I think that's going to take care of us. Let me get one more sweep here. Yeah, that's going to take care of us. We appreciate you.
Yes, we do. Without you, we'd be bored stiff. So thank you, Martin, for filling in and doing a great job, and thank you, everybody, for all the good questions and vigorous conversation, and we will reconvene next week.
Sounds good.
Okay. Good night.
All right. Good night. All right, folks, join us again tomorrow night, same time, same place, for our Tuesday night call. We should be having we'll check your calendars there now. Of course, Wednesday, again, there won't be a call as it is pass over there. All right, so join us again tomorrow night. Until then, everybody have a lovely, lovely and safe rest of your night, and be well.
The moderator has left the conference.
Thank you.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.